views and opinions expressed by Paratrinity Radio and their guests are solely theirs and do not represent the views and opinions of ASPRN or its affiliates.
Welcome to Paratrinity Radio. Your hosts, Mike and Ellie, plan to delve into the controversial subject of religion and the paranormal.
Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep.
Paratrinity Radio, where nothing is sacred. Powered by the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Paratrinity Radio on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dory, and I am very proud of you. You remembered the name of our show.
You forgot your own name.
Oh, yeah. Correct. Oh, well.
Well, that is your name. It's not what people know you by.
Yes, Ellie, Dory, whatever. But anyway.
I want the same for those of you who are unaware of that.
We're allowed to make mistakes, though.
I did remember the name of our show, which is unusual. So tonight we've got an awesome show lined up.
Yes, we do.
I've heard this guy all over the place on different shows as guest and even his own show, Reverend Tim Shaw, and he is the host of the Black Cat Lounge. He is a spiritualist, and I think he has some sort of psychic medium abilities as well. But I'm not real clear on that, so we'll ask him later. And he's listening right now as I say that, but probably laughing at me. But we'll figure that out later. And then I wanted to throw out there real quick, next week our guest will be Marla Brooks. We've had her on before, and she was an absolute delight to talk to, a wonderful guest.
Yeah, she was great to talk to. And we look forward to having her back next week.
I can't wait to get her back on.
And what's going on after that week?
It's what we like to call the para-threesome. And what that is we're going to have three guests on our show. It's going to include Marla Brooks, Matt Oxley, who you just heard, I think, 2 weeks ago, an atheist, and Christopher Maggard, who is the founder of Tri-State Paranormal, and he's been out in the chat room a lot. And we're going to have an open floor debate, open floor discussion. Details are to come, but we're going to call that the paranormal threesome. So that's coming up in 2 weeks, and I'm excited about tonight.
So. I am too. So you ready to get started?
I think we are.
Awesome. Let's get started.
Are you still there, Reverend Tim?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Of course I'm still here.
All right. I'm doing all right. So,
and may I say, by remote viewing you guys are beautiful, and Dory, your hair has never looked lovelier.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, I'm guessing you heard me fumbling around trying to introduce you. Was I
well,
right?
I was giggling at that. You know what? You know what? I often question what the hell I am anyway.
Yeah, I think we all kind of question what we all are. I mean, I know I'm a dork at times, but we know Mike is.
Well, you know what? Then I'm in good company, because I always say that I'm a putz first and everything else second.
So do you have some sort of, are you psychic?
I'm a medium. Okay. I'm a certified medium through the Niagara Spiritualist Church, and I took the bulk of my training through a small church in East Aurora, New York, which was part of the National Spiritualist Association of Churches, which is headquartered in Lilydale, New York, and which is a spiritualist camp. And I've taken, I have probably countless, I couldn't even tell you how many classes I've taken down there. Every year I try to take 5 to 6 different classes there, and I'm considered what they call a visiting medium there, which means I do gallery work. I primarily like to work at what they call Inspiration Stump, which was actually at one time it was actually a stump where speakers would stand up and address the audience. And right now it's pretty rotten, you know. So they've been kind of encased it in concrete. So that's where I do my work primarily. So yes, I guess you could consider me a medium. actually, my shirt says extra large, but you know, I mean, that's an old medium. Boom, 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 you know.
Was this mediumship something that you knew you had, like, as a child, or was it something you were actually just trained and learned as you grew up?
You know what? I ask countless mediums the exact same question, either on my show or when I speak to them one-on-one. And as an instructor, what I do is I polish mediums. And I say I polish mediums because I don't teach them really anything. I just get them to listen a little closer. And I will say that I've had the, you know, I won't call it a gift because it's not really a gift. Anybody can do what I do. I mean, I'm not special at all. I've had it since I've been a kid. And, you know, a lot of people make a big fuss out of it. A lot of people like to draw attention to themselves because they think that there's something different, something special. And they're not. It's just everybody has it. It's if you have the intent and the desire to speak to those on the other side or develop your own psychic side, you can do it. All you have to do is work and have the desire and the intent to do it. It's that simple. It's probably the hardest thing, easiest thing, I would say, to, you know, kind of polish up. I mean, too many people, we think too hard. We think too much. We're too logical. And this is something that's not really like that. I mean, you just let it flow. And when I call it getting diarrhea of the mouth. I just, you know, I just turn myself over to spirit and just let it just flow out and, you know, and let people hear what it has to say. The only thing I have is I got a couple internal filters that I don't allow, like, foul language through, or sometimes if it's, I'm not big on telling people about how they're messing up their lives through, like, extramarital affairs and sexual exploits. So I don't really bring that out normally in a reading or gallery reading. So those are things that are shown to me, but I don't really bring it out. So, I mean, that's it. But basically, you just open yourself up, you have your full belief in spirit, and let it go.
So would you say that it's the same for becoming psychic, that you can just, if you just relax and let yourself stop thinking so much, that you would be able to read people the way that you can? Oh, okay.
Exactly. And, well, do you guys know what the difference between a psychic and a medium is?
I think so.
Basically,
so if I answered it, I look like a moron. So,
well, no, I'll answer for you because you're not a moron. Guy's not a moron at all. But basically, what it is a medium works with spirit, and we work, with those on the other side. We get insights sometimes from those people. A psychic, you know, works in the human atmosphere. A medium can do everything pretty much a psychic can do, but a psychic doesn't work with those who have passed on. That's the only difference. I mean, and it's a conscious. Yeah, it's just a conscious choice. I mean, some people don't want to do this.
So as a medium, you can read humans and spirits.
Yeah, I mean, it's no big deal. Yeah, it's we have to understand that we go back and we start stripping down a lot of our own psyche down to its base. And I've studied under a guy by the name of Tom Brown Jr., and I love that guy. I mean, he's probably one of the greatest influences on my life. And Tom Brown is a great survivalist, backwoodsman. He's really into a lot of Native American cultures. And what he taught me was this. And I've seen this man. I've talked to him. I've taken classes from him. And what he says is something that I've always kind of felt. As humans, we needed a different sense. Something that kind of brought us and taught us where, like the herds were going, where the water was, where there was safe shelter. You had to have this. And as life went on and we became more of an agricultural society, a walled-in society, we did not need this. So as time went on, the only ones that kept this little bit of knowledge, what they called them shamans and priests and holy men and medicine men and that sort of thing, but the cultures and man as a whole started to lose it. And he equates it to this. if we put you in a hospital bed for a year, we took care of you, we gave you a little clicker for the TV set, you know, brought you your meals, took care of all your needs. At the end of that year, we told you to jump out of there and run down the hall. You couldn't do it. You would have to retrain your muscles. You'd have to retrain how you think. Well, that's all this is. That's all what psychic ability is. That's it. There's nothing more to it. Mediumship is the same way. And I know it sounds simple, but people make it so hard. People really do. People think that there's this massive, they're looking for a massive mystical experience. When for me, yes, I've had those, but my everyday experience is when I work with the abilities or whatever you want to call them, they come in whispers, not shouts. And, you know, it just goes back to its basic instinct. So, I hope I answered your question on that one.
Yeah, I was always under the impression that to be psychic, you had to like use that extra 3% of your brain that most people don't use or something. And it
listen, I only use 3% of my brain on a good day anyway.
And I was always under the impression you had to have something special so you actually could use that.
Absolutely not. Anybody can do this. And this is where I differ with a lot of different people and a lot of different organizations because of the fact that, as far as I'm concerned, you go out there, and if you want to do this, just do it. You do it. It's like anything else. Practice makes perfect. You have to learn the focus. You have to have a little bit of discipline. But overall, you just do it. And, I mean, I'm a little bit anal when it comes to ethics and why we do this and you know, the reasons for it. But it's no big deal. I mean, people will go and spend literally thousands and thousands of dollars to learn pretty much what I learned for maybe $100. And basically, all it is just listening. And the only difference between people who are psychic and mediums and people who aren't are that mediums and psychics listen. They listen to their bodies. They listen to the little voices in their heads. They listen. They notice minute things. They see symbols out there. When spirit shows you something or your brain opens up and you see, you know, you notice these little things in your brain, you don't question them. You just blurt them out.
And I always thought that the little person speaking inside my head was my mother nagging, but maybe it wasn't.
Listen, it could be Gazoo. You guys, you know, I'm showing my age, showing the Flintstones. You know, it could be that little green man up there. I don't know, you know. I'm not gonna go and, you know, discount that either, you know. But on the other hand, no. I mean, seriously, on a serious note, no. I mean, it's just trusting yourself. Too many people don't trust themselves. I was taught through a church, which is a little bit different, and it's most people learn how to do readings one-on-one, and that's a lot easier than standing up in front of a church congregation and blurting out, you know, some kind of a message from a spirit. Readings, when you see like John Edwards and that doing gallery readings, that style, that's part of our church services. And it's bringing a confirmation that there is no life, that there is a life after death, that, you know, the existence goes on. And so what better way is it than to bring forth these validations during a religious service? And let me tell you, you know, as you're sitting there as a student and there's, you know, 30 to 60, 70 people sitting in the church and the chairperson goes, and our next reader will be, and you got to stand up and go to the pulpit and you have got to bring through three spirit identifiers, which is, you know, something that to let the people know they'll be able to understand who it is and bring through a message. That can be nerve-wracking. But once you do that, if you learn to do that, you can do anything. And that is the way that I was taught, and I recommend it to all my students, even though, I mean, you know, I've got an extroverted personality, as you guys could probably imagine by now. But what I do is, I mean, I come from a point of joy, and I love to do that. In the beginning, it was I won't deny that it was a little nerve-wracking, but I have complete faith in those on the other side that I believe work with me, and I know that they'll never make me look like an idiot. Listen, I make myself look like an idiot every day. When I get up there and I do this gallery work, What comes out of my mouth, I never question. I just let it flow.
And I would guess that that's the best way to do it, because I think when people question everything that, like, when I'm talking to a psychic and they ask me questions before they ever say anything definite, it makes me think they're just kind of fishing.
Well, that's cold reading. Now, I've learned how to cold read. I have to learn. I have to know the difference, because I have to see it in my students. I have to know if they're taking up and it's what's called the collection of observations. And let's say, as an example, Dory, you come to me, and you're sitting in front of me, and you have a sweatshirt that has a poodle on it. And all of a sudden, I'm going, oh, you're a dog lover. Wow, that's really, like, real deep. Observation. You know, that's an observation. Now, if you come to me and you're wearing a poodle shirt, and at this point in my evolution, I feel that, let's say I feel a dog presence around you, but I would feel that I would be cheating you if I did not say, listen, you're wearing a dog t-shirt or a dog sweatshirt, but I have to be able to go now and say to you, I'm feeling this.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm doing is I'm acknowledging the fact that I'm seeing you wearing something and then bringing it through. But you have to be careful. I mean, a lot of times, I try not to. I tell people to keep their hands on their laps so I don't see the rings on their fingers. A lot of times, especially in gallery reading, when I'm up at Lilydale, you'll see me either look at the ground sometimes after I make initial eye contact of who I'm going to go to, and look up in the sky or whatever. And I'm not talking to Gazoo or like the secret devil down there or whatever. What I'm actually doing is I'm breaking eye contact with you, because I don't want to see if you're, you know, saying yes or no or whatever. Because in cold reading, I can just look at the way your eyes go, right, left. I can tell if I'm hitting or I'm not hitting. I can tell if just by your expressions, I can tell if you're starting to stiffen up or whatever, or you're relaxed or whatever. So you try not to do that. And this is something that I don't teach my students how to do, but I teach them how to avoid it. And these are things that you have to be very, as someone who goes to psychics, and I go to, and I once a year I get a reading, that's all I need. I'm very aware of that. And the minute, if I go to somebody new and the minute I catch him, I I'm polite and I don't say anything, but I'll never go back to him either, nor will I go and recommend them, because this is a business, and yes, it is a business that thrives by word of mouth.
Right.
So you have to be very careful. So you have to be aware of what you're doing. And someone who asks you a lot of questions up front, gone. Don't even follow through.
Right.
That's everybody. The other
kinda
thing
like
is
that Miss Cleo.
Oh, I love Miss Cleo. I love her. I love her because she was just so funny on that. We used to sit around we used to do our Miss Cleo imitations all the time. You know? Oh, man, I think you're a zombie. Where is my brains, man? I need to eat brains, you know? I mean, she was great. But you would be surprised the people that would call in. And you'd be surprised that the people... We live in a society that wants to be told what to do. We don't want to take... spiritualism teaches you a lot about personal responsibility. It's huge. I mean, that's one of the main tenets of spiritualism. And it teaches you that you have to be accountable for your own life and your own actions. Well, a lot of people don't want to be accountable. They go to a psychic. I've had people come to me, and this is the honest to God truth, is my husband fooling around on me? Well, honey, if you've got to come to me and ask me, there's a good chance that he is. You know him a lot better than I do. Or they come out there and they say, I don't know if I should get a divorce. Well, you know
what? Well, if you have to ask it, then isn't that kind of what you're already thinking you should do?
Exactly. And I'm not there to go, and I'm not there to, as if when I work with on a congregate level, which is a little bit different for counseling or whatever, you got to kind of, you know, you'd be a little bit more open. But if somebody just comes to you for a reading that wants that, that's not my job. And a lot of readers will do that, and that's fine. That's, God bless them. I'm happy that they do whatever they do and they feel comfortable with it. I just don't. I feel ethically that it isn't my place to tell someone that they should divorce their spouse. It's a good thing.
Well, I wouldn't imagine that it would really be ethical, even, you know, not in that situation where you're just a friend, because it can always backfire on you.
Oh, it can backfire hugely. And, you know, again, we have to take personal responsibility in our lives. And that means making a decision and owning it. We live in a society, again, that wants, that people want to be victims. And anybody who listens to my show, I rant and rave about don't be a victim. Don't be a victim in the society. Pick yourself up by your bootstraps. Whatever it takes, do whatever it takes not to be a victim. To own your words. Be careful. I mean, listen, we all make mistakes. I put my foot in my mouth daily, but, you know, you own everything that you do. And when you do something wrong or you make a mistake, you own it. Just own it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's all it takes. So make your own decisions in life. I mean, that's something that I really, really want people to understand. You know, a lot of people want heads up on stuff. Listen, you know what? I wouldn't be working for a highway department as my full-time job if I could get the lottery numbers from the other side. Are you kidding me? I'd be gone, you know. You know, I'd be like L. Ron Hubbard had. I would have had that fleet of ships off the, you know, off the coast, you know. But, I mean, seriously, I mean, really, people have to understand that, you know, this is not what it's there for. This is, you know, to go and really aid you along your path. And that's what I firmly believe in. And so my ethics are a little bit different. My ethics are a little bit stricter. And I try not to impose them on other people. But, you know, I mean, that's just the way I guess I'm put together.
Mm-hmm. Is that something that you initiated on your own, or is that what you were taught through the church that trained you?
I was taught, and they were very, very strict. As a matter of fact, as far as they're concerned, mediumship should have only been worked with for one purpose, and one purpose only, and that was only to bring through the validation of the continuity of life. That's it. That is it. Anything else was not really ethical. Everything else was basically considered a sideshow. It was considered an exercise of ego. I don't really adhere to that. I believe that what we do should wrap around some strict ethics, and I do believe that we should be able to go and bring through these messages. But on the other hand, I mean, we should also understand about energy. We should understand how it manipulates. We should understand that how everything is interactive, how energy affects every minute of our lives, how we can manipulate energy to bring positive things into our lives, not just bring through the validation of life. So everything is all interconnected. And that's where I kind of drew the line between the orthodoxy of which I was taught, and I kind of stepped away from it and went into a little bit more modern, a little bit more of a modern belief.
Okay. So in that church that you were taught, is the main, I don't want to say goal, but I guess, do you need to be a medium to be a part of that?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. You know, I mean, it's just like anything else. You don't have to be a priest to join the Catholic Church.
Okay.
It helps. But, it can be a good thing. It can help your understanding of what's going on. But, no, you don't have to be a medium. And you know what? Some people, even though everybody can do it, the ethical question is, should everybody do it? And I have to say no. Everybody isn't built the same. Everybody in their own evolutions at this time are not up at the same level. And sometimes mediumship can be pretty overwhelming, and it can be obsessive. You have to really watch it. You have to really be careful, and you really have to walk sometimes a very fine line. And mediumship, again, I mean, you know, my poor wife, you know, I'm laying in bed, and all of a sudden I wake up in the middle of the night, and I'm talking to somebody who's, like, standing next to the bed, you know, and she goes, "Who are you talking to?" And I'm saying, "Some lady that's dead." And she goes, "In this room," you know? I mean, that's normal. I mean, these are things that happen. And I work within certain boundaries that normally this stuff, you know, won't wake me up in the middle of the night. But, you know, I mean, it's not for everyone. I mean, when I first started mediumship, for some reason, I used to get children that passed either through miscarriage, abortion, or within stillborn, or passed within the first couple of years of life. That's not real pleasant. And when I first started doing serious reading, and I mean, I really, you know, I mean, I've chipped at this for a long time, but I'd say within the last decade is when I really dedicated myself and I knew the path I wanted to go on. But you know, you start seeing things that aren't really comfortable. When I would bring through a personality at that time, it would go in reverse order, which means the last moments of that person's life. You would hear if they were in a hospice or a hospital situation. You would hear, you know, the activity going on. You would hear the heart monitor. You would hear all this stuff. You would start feeling the last breath leave the body. You would start feeling the heart slowing down. You could feel the pain. Sometimes you could feel medicine when they would inject it into the IVs. I mean, you could feel that. You could feel the cold going through your arm. So, I mean, some things are not pleasant. Sometimes you feel in the beginning when I used to take on a lot of physical pain. Especially like if I was bringing through a personality that may have had a massive heart attack or an aneurysm that let go in the stomach or you know, something in the head. I mean, you would get this pain. Now, you know, along my path in my evolution, what I do now is I can kind of just get the essence of that, not just get the pain. So these are things that are not really pleasant. You know, I mean, it's funny because I'm not a real kumbaya, all love type of person. So, you know, but yet I try to have compassion for the spirit on the other side trying to get through. But sometimes it's not pleasant, and people have to understand that. And that's something I tell my students right up front. You know, you just got to be careful what you're doing, and you got to really want to do this for the right reason.
So how do, I mean, from what I've learned over the past guests that we've had, a lot of the talking to the dead, so to speak, and using tools that allow you to do that, it opens up the doors for evil entities or demons. How do you, as a medium, keep with, I guess you could say, the good and not open the door for something like that? And how is that different?
Well, first off, the way I was originally taught was we don't use tools. So I was taught hardcore mental mediumship, which I teach to my students, and I encourage my students to actually pursue that first, because of the fact it hones your skills and it really pushes a lot of barriers. I mean, it really does. I mean, it creates a trust within yourself, and that's what I like. And a couple of years ago, I took a class with a friend of mine. This guy's great, Ray Buckland. He's the guy that brought the Gardarian Wiccan religion here to the U.S. I love that guy. He's such a wonderful man. And I took a class with him that's called Tools for Mediumship, and it covered everything: scrying, crystal balls, pendulum work, dowsing rods, you name it, tarot. You know, I mean, it was great. And he said the same thing, but primarily, after you learn it, what's wrong with you using these tools? So what I did is I decided to use these tools, and I have to say that I've had some really great success with them. Now, negative entities, you have to. Now, everybody's got the story about the Ouija board that, you know, a friend of a friend of a friend who got drunk one night in college, and they whipped out this Ouija board, and then, like, all these demons and stuff came.
Uh-huh.
Basically, what it is the fact that it's a tool. And when all it is a point of focus. Anything that we're using is a point of focus. It's you that is actually getting this stuff to move. We use table tipping all the time in the spiritualist religion. What is it? I mean, it's nothing more but biomechanics, spirit control biomechanics. Actually, spirit is affecting your body in such a way that we believe that you're creating ectoplasm out of your fingertips, and you know, the table starts to jump around and levitate and all that stuff and tap out answers. And I mean, that's all it is focus. But to someone who is not doing it for the best reasons or the highest reasons, you can, you know, pretty much open up a can of whoop ass on yourself, you know, and you can go and you can bring in some stuff that you don't want to bring in. This is why this all goes back to ethics. My first class, and my students will tell you, they hate my first classes. They absolutely despise them because I sit down there and I just spell it out, the ethics of what we do and how to stay safe. And, you know, I mean, but basically, if we break it all down, I mean, if you want to, you know, I don't care what you do, your own ritual to be safe. You know, if you want to go and dance around with a headless chicken, go for it. You know, whatever you believe it helps you, do it. But break it down. What is a ritual? A ritual protection is a living, moving prayer. What is a prayer? A prayer is intent. It is focused intent for a purpose. What's the purpose? The purpose is to protect yourself from evil. My mentor, Sharon Klingler, I love her. Oh, my God. She's from Ohio, too. I love this woman. She's in Lilydale every summer. She once told me that I don't go and I don't do any outward activities or rituals. And I said, geez, Sharon, why? She goes, because I live a pretty good life. She goes, I'm not perfect, but I live a pretty good life. I'm not out there like, you know, really going out to badmouth people or do anything evil. Because I live a good life and because I have an intense belief that I myself am protected, thus I am. Now, the thing that you have to worry about with this type of thought or protection is that sometimes there's chinks in the armor. If you have any doubt whatsoever, anything, any doubt, that's a chink in the armor, that's where the negativity can come in. I experienced something like that a couple of years ago, so I know firsthand. If you believe 100%, you know, you believe, so it is. After that, I've never had a problem since.
Wow.
It sounds simple, I know. See, that's the one thing that you'll find out about me. It's keep it simple, stupid, because otherwise I myself won't understand it.
No, I mean, right now I am learning about, you know, adult learning theories, and it's an intense class because I'm going for my doctorate. But a lot of things that I'm learning about it is that it is really simply just that simple. And there is no extra gobbledygook and oogie boogie stuff that's on top of it that you kind of start to think of when you look at people who have their doctorates and you're like, oh, well, I'll never reach that level because they just know everything. And then you just realize when you get to that level that you really don't know anything and you're really not going to know much of anything else.
Exactly. And that's what, you know, and that's the one thing that you always have to know in anything in the metaphysical field, anything, you'll ever forever be a student, never a master. Just because I got a certification for mediumship, big deal. You know, I mean, that just meant I brought like 12 people through that, you know, that people actually could identify and they signed a certificate for. It doesn't mean anything. I'm constantly evolving. I'm constantly studying. There's always someone better than me. Always. Always, always, always. And you know what? As a healer or anything in the metaphysical fields, you strive to keep going. And the further you go, the less you know. And that's what the adventure is. That's what we love. You know, it's excitement. And, you know, I mean, in order to be good at this, you have to have a pure joy. You have to be able to go, and you have to have an absolute love for this, and you have to want to do it, and you have to want to do it with your whole soul. And that's what keeps it exciting. You know, just when I plateau out and, you know, I'm like, oh my God, now, you know, I've been sitting here for how long? I have nothing I know I want to know or what I'm doing or whatever. All of a sudden, boom, something falls in my lap and I'm, yeah, that's great. I'm ready to go again, you know? So that's what the fun of it is.
Well, the whole thing that I'm learning and that I keep hearing is just that you have to keep going and find some spark in there to make you want to do it. And that it is actually quite interesting and fun to learn about all of these different point of views, even if they are from a similar standpoint.
Well, this is what I actually love, and that's what I love about my show, is because I bring on all sorts of crazy people. I love them. I love them. I mean, I learned from Satanists. I learned from, you guys got Corvus Nocturnum on here. I love that guy. I think he's one of the greatest people out there. You know, Marla Brooks, on your show next week. I mean, she is Wiccan. She's forever getting me out of the broom closet because my training now is not so much as, I am a spiritualist and I still claim to be a spiritualist, but I do have some eclectic leanings, which means that I'm open to a lot of things. I do have an altar. I do work with crystals because they're focal points. But, you know, the one thing that you've got to learn is you've got to learn that life is exciting. And you know what? You can learn something from everyone, and that's what's great about it.
Right. And before we continue here, we need to take a short break. It's probably going to be about a four-minute break, a song, and a couple of commercials. So everybody out there in the chat room, thank you for coming by the chat room. Stick around. We'll be right back. And people not in the chat room, come over to asprn.com/studiob.html and tune in, ask your questions, enjoy the chat with all the lovely people out there. And you've been listening to Paratrinity Radio right here on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.
Where nothing is sacred.
Serving the paranormal community. All HostYourGhost plans include ad-free hosting, email accounts, and an easy-to-use control panel. With packages starting at just $4.99 a month, we scare away the competition. So stop watching your money vaporize and let us host your ghost at hostyourghost.com.
Hi, this is Chris from Tri-State Paranormal, Northern Kentucky. And you're listening to Paratrinity Radio.
Views and opinions expressed by Paratrinity Radio and their guests are solely theirs and do not represent the views and opinions of ASPRN or its affiliates.
All right, and we're back.
Yes, we are.
And we're here on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network, and we're talking to Reverend Tim Shaw.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hello there. That's little Barry White coming out you. Doo doo doo. Hey, Dory, how are you?
Barry White. Although I guess he wasn't that little, but anyway.
He's kind of a big dude. So, you were talking about how you're kind of, I don't know if you would say, into the, well, is spiritualism considered an occult religion by society?
Well, that's yes and no. Yes and no. I mean, what we do, according to a lot of Christian religions, is, is necromancy.
Right.
And they believe that we shouldn't be talking to the dead. But if you look at the Bible, I mean, all the prophets talk to the dead. Right. So, I don't want to turn that back at them, you know. But, it could be a cult. A cult is something, the word occult usually means something hidden. And, you know, as a spiritualist, we're not really hidden. We're a religion and, and especially in this society, well, but I take that back. In some societies in different areas of the U.S. England, Australia, and Europe, we're just like a regular religion. I mean, most of us, churches itself and the spiritualist religion don't really, for the most part, they don't actually have buildings. They usually work, they rent spaces through Masonic halls or other places. Or we gather at a place in a spiritualist camp like Lilydale, New York. But I mean, we're just like everybody else. We just go and we worship, and that's about it. I mean, we're just kind of like everyday people. But the funny thing is that a lot of times the services are held either during the week at night or Sundays at night, and that's so we can give time to all the good church going people who want to come to our services later on. But that's a true story. That actually is.
I don't quite believe that you need an actual building to worship. I think, he's in the trees or in the air that you breathe.
He's with you all the time.
Right. And that's exactly what I've been taught. So why do I need a building?
You don't need a building. And this is something that a lot of people confuse. They equate religion with organization. And you don't have to belong to an organization to be spiritual. As a matter of fact, a board member from a larger spiritualist organization, and there are several larger spiritualist organizations in the U.S., once told me that she's not a spiritual person. She's a spiritualist. And that I was appalled at that. As a spiritualist, I was appalled at that, because now what to me she said was she stopped her learning. She stopped it because the organization was more important than her spirituality. And to me, there's nothing more important than your spirituality. And what I tell people is this: if whatever you belong to does not serve your purposes, why stay? Move on. Find something that will satisfy you. And, whether it's being part of a church, whether it's not being part of a church, whether it's going out and worshiping nature, if you can see spirit, you can see the actions of something higher than ourselves in all that you that surround yourself with. Isn't that a religion? Isn't that a philosophy of life? Isn't that a dogma? So, I mean, you know, as a card-carrying spiritualist, I do have my problems with a lot of organizations, because what happens is inevitably the organization grows too large and no longer serves in the best interest of the congregation. What happens is the organization serves to keep itself as a self-running entity. And when that happens, that's when the congregation sometimes suffers. So you have to watch that. So, again, personal responsibility. It's not up to you to destroy the organization. It's up to you either to do one of two things. And we all have free will. And that would be either help change the organization to the better or leave it and seek something else on your own.
Right.
So what's the... This is probably a kind of stupid question, but what's the main difference between spiritualism and Christian?
It's not a stupid question at all now, Mike. Now, don't let me go down there and have to paddle you about that one, okay? Basically, what it is. Now, originally, and this is a broad-range question, because originally, the spiritualist religion... was not even a religion at all, nor was it, I believe personally, was it ever meant to be a religion. It was almost like a hybrid, and they took like the best of all these different religions and channel work, which is the spirits that came through, and patched together a religion. And what happened was, the only reason why it became a religion is because, and I come right out and say during the early 1900s, which is sometimes considered a golden age of spiritualism, there were like so many frauds out there. It's disgusting. I mean, I'm appalled as someone who is interested in the spiritualist religion's history. I'm appalled at at all the frauds out there. And I know there's like, you know, all these people out there right that are going to be listening to this now, going clutching their chests, going, "Oh my God, blasphemy!" But the simple truth is, you know what? The pictures of Mumler, supposedly spirit pictures, and these other ones, they're not spirit pictures at all. They're double exposures. I mean, right now we can expose all of that. Houdini, who hated so many of these mediums, actually did spiritualism a favor by trying to bring it down. So did Congress when they were trying to enact different acts to and different policies to put a curb on on spiritualists and mediums and fraudulent mediums. They did a favor. They forced it to look at itself. They crushed all these frauds. It was fantastic, and I certainly believe in it, and I'm glad that they did. So basically, that's why it became a religion, to go and band together for protection against the U.S. government, legal protection. But the difference now between the original spiritualists and Christianity is real simple. They don't believe Jesus Christ, is God. They don't believe that he's the Son of God. They believe he's an enlightened instructor, just like Muhammad and all those who were some of the great philosophers of life. And so that's huge. I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, you ask any Baptist, I mean, somebody like me is, you know, is like really bad, because I can't grasp it. But now there are hybrid religions, Christian metaphysicals, and these are religions that espouse the basic tenets of spiritualism, where you can go and you can bring forth messages from those on the other side or from spirit itself, as in prophecy, and still believe in Jesus Christ, still believe in the Bible. So, I mean, it's pretty widespread now. It's almost like the Wiccan religions, you know. I mean, everybody has left their mark on it, and some religions have split off from the mainstream, and God bless them. I'm glad they do, because they show individuality and personal thought, perseverance, and free will.
Right. The gifts.
Exactly.
So what makes a person spiritual, then? I think I'm a little confused with the definition of the word spiritual. I think I'm confused with that. So
You know what? A spiritual person, to me, simply believes that there is something greater than our own ego.
Okay.
God, the infinite intelligence, whatever you want to call it. you know, the mother, father, God, you know, whatever you want to call it. And that's pretty much what it is. And, you know, to be spiritual doesn't mean that you have to go and sit up a mountaintop naked in the cold and meditate for 30 hours, you know. I mean, you don't have to do that to be a spiritual person. You believe and have that belief, and you carry that belief on, and you just take the time to learn and to experience what your belief systems are, you know, and actually formulate your own belief systems. And that's something that a lot of people don't do. So too many people, I went to a parochial school growing up, and you know, it's funny because you know, I see so many people that have just been Pavlov fed, and they don't think for themselves. And again, it goes back to, you know, our original conversation. You have to think for yourself. You have to find what fits for you. I mean, I'm constantly striving to find what fits for you, you know, fits for me. And that's what I believe what makes me a spiritual person.
That is something that I'm learning, and that I try to teach my students, that you can't take everything at face value. You can't necessarily just assume that what somebody says is 100%.
Exactly. And that goes for mediums, too. The one thing that I personally am is I'm a skeptic, even though I believe in all this stuff, you know. And it's like so many people say, oh my God, how can you do that? Well, you know what, you have to be skeptical. I'm not going to be, again, studying spiritualism, the religion, and the evolution of it since the Fox sisters in the 1840s. I mean, I've seen some wonderful things. I've experienced things that, you know, we don't call anything miracles. There's no miracles in life. Everything is normal. There's nothing paranormal. There's nothing supernatural. It's all natural, you know? And I've really experienced some great things. But there are some things out there, and you guys, are anybody who's a paranormal investigator, Photoshop is a wonderful thing. It's creation. It's great. But my God, it really messes up a lot of evidence out there, and it throws good positive evidence into question. It's the same thing with mediums, and the same thing with psychics. You know, what they say is only what they're getting. You can't go and you can't believe, sometimes you can't believe everything that you're told. And that's why, again, before I do a reading for somebody, before I do gallery work, I say, listen, this is what I'm going to tell you guys. You don't have to, this, you know, it may not fit for you. You know, what I'm telling you is just whatever I'm getting through. You have the free will to take what I'm telling you. You have the free will to leave, or to leave it behind. Unfortunately, there are unscrupulous people out there that will go out of their way to pretend to be psychic, pretend to be mediums, and really do things, you know, just for cash, you know, and right. Bilk the public. And you have to
prey upon those that are, you know, really, hate to say this term, but are kind of desperate for answers.
Well, desperation, exactly. I mean, that's something that desperation really impairs free will. And the reason why it does, in common sense, the reason why it does is because you want to go, and let's say you lost somebody dear, and you want to know that this person is living. Well, you know what? You could have somebody that may want to take you for a ride and might be a great cold reader. Might be a fantastic cold reader. And, you know, that will go, and, you know, you'll walk away, and I don't know how these people can do it. I really don't, because, I mean, if I was to do something like that, karma would come down and take a big chunk out of my butt. I mean, really. I mean, karma with me, if I do something like, I learned a long time ago, if I mess up, it's coming to get me. That's just the way it works. But these people will go, and their whole job is to string you along in order to get you to get repeat visits and stuff, to come back to them and, you know, basically make money off of you, become a parasite on your wallet. And they do this by going and really playing up the grief and the desperation of grieving people. And again, ethically, you have to be so careful. And again, I mean, these people somewhere down the line, I mean, they're gonna get something. It's just gonna come back at them.
So you had mentioned about the paranormal. I'm sorry, did you have a question?
I was just gonna say it's not just mediums or psychics that do that. It's, you know, sometimes some certain organized religions will kind of prey upon your pocket.
Oh, I mean, definitely.
You look at certain, you know, religions, like, you know, TV evangelists. Not all of them, but some of them have these big, huge diamond rings and these Armani suits.
Well,
and they sit there and tell you, you must live humbly.
Well, exactly. I mean, and this is something you have to really watch. You know what? Again, that's their thing. That's fantastic. They're out there. They're preaching. It's expensive to get the word out there. They understand that. They believe sometimes in flash. Sometimes our congregations will only... You know, a lot of them believe that, you know, if they show flash, that it's God's way of rewarding them, saying, hey, you've done a great job. Here, I grant you and I give you this. So why not go out there and show how great God is by look how I look or look at the car I drive? There's nothing wrong with that. Again, that's your own personal belief. You've got to have common sense with it. But it's like going to an unscrupulous car dealer. You know, I mean, you could have just a fuse that wiggled out of its slot and the reason why you don't have any lights. I mean, and you can have a good mechanic come out there and find that problem, or you can have a mechanic that's going to go and screw you over and charge you, you know, umpteen hours of labor and change all the bulbs and sockets and all this other stuff. You know, I mean, you just have to be careful. It's buyer beware out there.
Right.
So I'm in the paranormal field. I'm an investigator and an author. And before I got into the paranormal field, I hadn't heard much about psychics or mediums beyond, like,
TV
and the...
Great place to find out about them.
The crazy lady.
Miss Cleo.
That was all I knew about. And then once I got into the paranormal field, I found people like you and a bunch of other ones. Would you say that psychic and mediumship has been considered by society to be a paranormal gift?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. And again, that's the outside world looking in.
Right.
A good psychic, a good medium, in my estimation and in my opinion, which means like next to nothing. If I had like, you know, a buck and a half, I could probably get myself a small coffee someplace, you know. But, I mean, seriously, it's nothing. It means nothing. It's not really anything. And, you know, people just don't understand that. People see all this. And sometimes it's a lack of understanding, and sometimes you're just judged by what society wants you to, you know, see. I mean, we're not all like that lady, that little lady in Poltergeist, you know, 4'8", you know, running around with a weird voice, you know, and, you know, making like, you know, just, you know, bringing all sorts of stuff through, even though I do know some people like that. I have to preface that. I really do. And they're beautiful people. But, you know, you'd be surprised the different walks of life we all come from. I mean, it's just different, I guess. That's the best way I can describe it. And we're nothing. Again, we're nothing. Before every reading, I said, I'm just dust. That's all I am. I'm just dust. So
where would Hollywood kind of get some of their idea that, you know, you all are supposedly weird people? I mean, everybody's weird.
I was going to say, you know, weird, that's weird as me, you know?
I'd like to say I'm weird, because then that would make me more fun.
Yeah, really. We had a duct tape conversation earlier, but we won't go into that on the break.
I wonder where they get their stuff from, because they want to make it seem like you all are like the, I can't think of the actress's name, but, you know, short, kind of spooky, sometimes come out of nowhere and scare the bejesus out of people.
Is this what people want to see? What people want to please?
People want a thrill ride. People want a thrill ride. And I know mediums that will give them a thrill ride. I know people that will dress the part. I mean, it's what everybody wants. And let's go right back down to you can go right back down to the Victorian age and start thinking about, you know, why was Frankenstein written? Why was Dracula written? Why did these stories develop into plays? Why did these plays develop into movies? People want escapism. People want that suspension of reality. People want to be taken out of their lives for just whatever amount of time. So in order to do that, in order to amp up what we are as mediums and psychics, Hollywood, of course, has, you know, put a spin on us. And, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You know? I mean, I think lately it's a little bit better. But, I mean, for the most part, it's a distortion. But I think if anybody that really wants to go and you know, go to a psychic, they can see right through it. When I was growing up, when I used to go to psychic fairs back in the New Age, and I'll put quotations around that because I still shudder at that, the New Age, I remember psychics standing there with turbans. I remember psychics dressed in robes, wearing jeweled daggers. I remember that stuff because that's what the people wanted. Now people don't want that. People want the ghost whisperer. You know, people want someone who looks, I'll just say, quote unquote, normal. You know, something. They just want a regular person to sit there with them. So, I mean, thankfully, you know, for the most part, most of the people that I've met within the last decade or so, they're not looking for the thrill ride.
Tim, what do you think about the sleight of hand people and modern day magicians like the son of or grandson of Harry Houdini, who was one of those largest detractors, or I don't want to say the word, you know, debunkers of people like us who do have psychic abilities?
Yeah. I absolutely love them. I think they're great. I think they're great. And the reason why I think they're great is, first of all, I think it's fantastic. I love what they do, man. I'm a huge fan of Chris Angel. You know. I mean, I really love it. But they bring stability to what I do. Now, again, I mean, you got to understand where I come from. I come from a situation where I don't care what anybody thinks of my belief system. I really don't. That's not what we do. And spiritualism, it's a religion of conversion, conviction. It's a religion of conviction. You've got to really believe this, not going out there trying to convert people, you know? So, I mean, it doesn't bother me. But I think that all these debunkers, I think all these skeptics out there, I think all the sleight of hand people, so long as they go out there and they say, listen, you know, this is magic, I don't have a problem with it. I have a problem with people who say sometimes that, you know, when they perform on cue, that this is supernatural or paranormal. I have a big problem with that, because that is lying. That's cheating. And as someone who's been in this field, I've witnessed stuff fly off shelves. I've seen apparitions. I've seen some great stuff, you know. You know,
so
you
don't need that stuff. How are they able to debunk, so to speak? I mean, again, a terrible term, but for lack of a better word, I don't see how they're able to debunk really anything.
Physical phenomena is very easy to debunk. Just about all physical phenomena can be duplicated by a world-class magician. No question. That's where scientific method comes in. I teach some physical phenomena. I mean, up to a point, I'm a mental medium, not what they consider a physical medium, which produces physical phenomena on cue. So I'm very careful with that. And that's where you have to have tight controls. And the second thing you're going to find out is you can't do this stuff on cue. You know, I know great mediums that levitate spirit trumpets, which are they look like long listening horns. They use them in seance. I know one down in Erie, Pennsylvania. She's fantastic, and she taught me seance. That's the person that I went to. And you know what? It doesn't always work on cue. It doesn't work on cue, and you have to be so careful, and you have to have such a controlled environment, because otherwise it can come into question. And it can come into question to the people who are the sitters, the people who experience this. Now, do you want to be the person that's going to go and, when this person may question that this is not real, that's going to just throw their spirituality into a tizzy? I don't want to be that person. I don't want that karmic residue on my life, you know? Mm-hmm. So I would rather, and when we do seance, I've done seance. I work up at the, I'm a volunteer up at the Iron Island Museum, if anybody ever saw that TAPS episode, up here in Buffalo, New York, and that's where I teach out of. And you know what? We do seance there, and it's fantastic. I mean, sometimes we get tables moving, and we get bangs on the walls and stuff. But guess what? Some nights, you know, some nights you don't get nothing. All you get is people's stomachs growling, you know. That's it. But you have to tell the people right up front. You know, you have to be honest. And in this field, you have to be very honest. Mental mediumship is a little bit harder to disprove. But again, if you want to go and disprove it, you have to put it into the scientific boundaries. You know, you have to have tight controls on that. I mean, a lot of people have asked me to do tests. I'm not a test medium. That's not what I do. I really don't care. You know, some people need it for ego. Some people want to prove a point. Me, I don't care. My belief is my belief. You know?
That's a great way to see it, because I mean, you could waste your whole life trying to prove who you are to everyone else. I mean, all that matters is just, you know, between you and, you know, if you believe in one, you're God.
Exactly, and that's all you should be doing. That's it. That's the only person you should do. And again, a lot of people are out there looking for. See, I believe that a lot of the skeptics. I don't ever really get bothered by skeptics. People won't really bother me because I'm doing it more in a religious thing. That's my framework. I try to do it more in an ethical, religious type of environment. But also, I'm a firm believer in giving back, and the religion teaches you to be of service. And it doesn't matter who you're of service to. Just be of service. When I, as a medium, I'm being of service to the client that's sitting in front of me and the spirit personality on the other side. But also, if you go and you charge for this, if you charge for what you're doing, for this so-called ability, then I'm a firm believer that you should give back more than half of whatever you take in. Again, that's only my opinion, and that's just the way I live my life. So I do a lot of charity work, you know, and I love that. And it's, and again, that's for me, it's fulfilling. And I'll come right out and tell you, yes, I do make money at this. You want to know what I do with the money? You know, anything that I do take in, it goes right back into my classes, travel time, going back and forth to Lilydale. You know, that's what it's for, and it always goes back. It buys my books, and by the way, I'm a cheap Scotsman, so all my books come from half.com. You know, I mean, I won't lie about it, but that's what I use that money for. So everything goes back into it. So whatever I don't give to a charity, I give back. You know, I try to put it back into my own studies.
Right.
Well, we're going to take another short break here. That was a terrible lead up.
Yes, it was. You want to try that again? Okay, so, rewind. Okay, start again.
We're going to take a short break here. So you all have been listening to Paratrinity Radio right here on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.
Yes.
Where nothing is sacred.
And then.
Paranormal Magazine, a publication dedicated to the paranormal and the unexplained. The magazine features articles covering everything from ghosts and hauntings to UFOs and ancient mysteries. You can also expect contributions from experts in the paranormal field, as well as investigations, pictures, feature articles, book reviews, movie reviews, and much, much more. Join us as we explore the unknown. Unexplained Paranormal Magazine. For more information, please visit our website at unexplainedmag.com. That's unexplainedmag.com.
Is coming. Listen. You might want to run for cover. Unless.
Hey, Midwest Paratalk Radio is coming to you live every Thursday night on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.
This is Don Shy, the parapublicist, and you're listening to Paratrinity Radio, where nothing is sacred.
The views and opinions expressed by Paratrinity Radio and their guests are solely theirs and do not represent the views and opinions of ASPRN or its affiliates.
All right, and we are back right here at the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network. Tim.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Doing all right. How are you?
great talking to you.
I'm still giggling. I'm sorry, guys.
Not a problem. There was another question I wanted to ask you that's kind of not related to what we've been talking about, so I guess now is a good time to throw it out there.
Throw it out there, babe.
Spirit guides.
Sure.
I've heard a lot about them. I've heard we all have them. How do you discover who your spirit guide is? What does it take to...
Basically, what you... this is hard, and the reason why I'm going to say it hard, it's hard because of the fact that it all depends on your actual belief system. So I can tell you, like, in my belief system, I take it for granted that I have spirit guides. I have one guide that's a gatekeeper who's been with me since the day I was born, and that's his job. And I have other spirit guides that come and go, and I have two main spirit guides who help me in my channel work and my message work. And I guess the best way to discover your spirit guides is first figure out exactly what you believe. And the simple truth is the guides will meet. The spirits on the other side will form to your belief system. I'm not a big angels and demon guy. You know, I really don't believe in angels and demons. So I believe in guides. And to me, that's a way to do it. And some people have animal totems. Some people, believe that that there are beings there in place to aid your journey or impede your journey. It all depends on what you want to do. I know a lot of shaman who just totally disagree with me when it comes to spirit guides. Totally disagree. And they believe that since everything is energy, all you're doing is pulling energy, the knowledge from wherever, the Akashic records or just the energy that's floating around in the atmosphere or wherever they get it. You can just tap into it. So, I mean, it depends on your own belief system. Again, me, what I did is I placed the intent. I wanted to know who my spirit guides were. And in meditations, I was shown. It's as simple as that. If you're not shown, maybe you don't have all your ducks in a row when it comes to your own belief system.
I was once told my spirit guide was some sort of Roman... I think it was some sort of Roman warrior or something like that. And ever since that person told me that, I've been very curious what she was talking about.
Well, you know, some people will read spirit guides. I'm not one of those people primarily. And the reason why I don't do it is because there's a lot of conjecture in it. And I don't want to go and create a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I don't do that. I just tell you that you can do it, and I'll work with people who want to go and discover them for themselves. I mean, probably one of my spirit guides is some drunk drug addict sideshow barker. You know, I mean, you know, that would make perfect sense. Yeah, that would probably make perfect sense to me. I don't want to go, and again, that's why I don't read them, because I just feel it's everybody's own responsibility to kind of figure out how it is. And a lot of times what happens is, because it creates a self-fulfilling prophecy, the person, let's say I'm going to tell you that your spirit guide is this Roman, all of a sudden they never had an interest in Roman, any kind of Roman history. Now all of a sudden they start researching it, and they find all of a sudden it's very familiar to them. So there's a lot of questions to that. Is it really a spirit guide? Is it a self-fulfilling prophecy? Or if you believe in reincarnation, could it be a past life? Or could it be the spirit of a Roman who is attracted to your energy? I mean, there's a lot of variables in there, so that's why I don't do it.
Do you believe in reincarnation?
Do I personally? Oh, yeah, definitely. The spiritualist religion kind of leaves it up to you. They don't have enough proof that they say they don't have enough proof to say that reincarnation is an actual event. Me, I've had glimpses, I've had dreams, so I personally believe in it.
Is there a specific way to find out if maybe you have had past lives? Because, I mean, I've never actually felt a deja vu moment or anything of that sort where I just knew something, but I knew that I couldn't have been there or couldn't have known it before.
It's, again, this is hard. I mean, I do past life readings, But I always caution people. I come right out and put a disclaimer out there. I say, listen, you know, there's a lot of variables. And again, I go and I spell out all the variables, just like I did now. And it all comes down to this. If, let's say, you get a dream, mm-hmm. and the dream is that real, no distortion in that dream, it's that real. Let's say you're talking to somebody in the dream, and mm-hmm. you notice, like, minute things in the dream, shoes, somebody's shoes, or like an implement or a type of utensil, and you notice it. You know what? There's a good chance that might be an indicator that you did live during that time period. However, in this age of all this communication and TV and everything, could it be something that perhaps is tucked in your subconscious? Of course. Goes into belief system. Goes all into belief system. And this is why I tell people, never believe anything without really you going and checking it. And that's what's, again, we go back to why spiritualism is a conviction, not a conversion, because you test anything that you bring through to your own satisfaction. And if you can believe that, that's for you. So it's a bit of a cop-out answer, but you have to, and I mean, I'm honest about it. It's a cop-out answer, but it's all belief. It's all belief. So, I mean, you know, the big ones are, like, I had a dream, and I told, I think, on Kimmy J on her show, Witching Hour, I said that I had a dream, and I had this dream about, like, being in this enclosed area and water coming over the top of me and smelling ozone and seeing, you know, a red light inside this enclosed area. And years later, the German film Das Boot came out, you know, about the German U-boat. And I sat there and was amazed because I thought to myself, that's what I saw, that control room. That is what I saw, except it was destroyed. And where would I have gotten that? I was about 9 years old when I had experienced that. So at that time, to me, I wouldn't have had that much, feed going into my brain that would show me that time era per se. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had no interest in it. But yet, it was so familiar. So, I mean, that was a deja vu moment for me. So I do believe that I died on a German U-boat in a past life.
Are dreams really, I guess you could say, important in spiritualism?
Dreams are a reflection of what you ate for dinner. No, again.
A bit of beef. Okay.
Yes. Chili, that chili will kill you every time. The problem with dreams is the fact that they come in symbols. There's a lot of, again, subconscious workings going on in your brain. I always tell people, if you want to go and take a dream literally, what you have to do is, if you feel, number one, symbolically, that it's very important to your life, okay, that may be a message. Or number two, in that dream, if you feel, let's say you're talking to somebody on the other side, let's say grandpa who's been dead 10 years has been sitting there, and you just feel so comfortable that it is like, yes, I am talking with this person. And you wake up and you say, oh my God, it was just like talking with that person. Chances are you did in that dream state. So that's about as important as we go into dreams. We're not big into the interpretation of dreams, although some people, spiritualists, that is what their main interest is.
I can safely say, though, I did have this one dream. I dreamt that I lost a tooth, and about a day or two later, I lost a tooth.
See, those are dreams of precognition. And that is a form of crisis telepathy. And crisis telepathy is where it can go from human mind to human mind, but it also can go from spirit mind to human mind. And that's usually a warning. That's when a spirit on the other side wants to warn you of something that's going on. So chances are what that was not so much your body telling you that your tooth is going to fall out, unless, of course, I mean, you've got, you know, some nasty gum disease, and, you know, and every time you smile, everything's wiggling. What it is, hey, listen, you know, I work with guys like that, okay? But, I mean, what chances are is it may have been a spirit on the other side saying, hey, listen, you're going to have a little problem. Don't be surprised when it happens. And that's just very common. And my students, I drive them up the wall because I always say, Yes, that's typical. And that is typical of a recognizant dream or crisis telepathy or some type of spirit to human mind telepathy.
Yeah, normally I don't have those types of dreams at all like that.
Well, we don't want to know what Mike's dreams are like. We're kind of afraid of those. I don't know. Mike, all I know is I don't want to know about the midget and the ice cream. I don't want to know about that stuff. So you can tell me off air about that one.
Yeah, I don't usually remember many of my dreams.
Oh, if I had a midget and ice cream, I'd remember that one.
There was one I did remember where I don't know where we were, but it was me and a couple other, I think, pretty close family members or friends, and for some reason we were all shot point blank and killed, and then I think it was like the next day or 2 days later my cat died.
Again, so it's an interpretation.
Uh-huh.
It's an interpretation. I mean, again, it's something like that is a dream of precognition, and you have to look at. See, that's again, a lot of people don't realize that this is an imperfect science. Mediums work not only literally but symbolically. Sometimes you're going to get a symbol, you're going to be like, "What the heck is that?" You know, and that's why you just got to bring it out, and you have to tell people. Dreams are a lot are the same way. Sometimes, you know, you get something that might be precognitive, and what you have to look at is you have to look at the result. What is the main theme of the dream? Death. It could either be literally, which is your cat passed, or it could be symbolic, as in a change, such as the death card in the tarot. So, I mean, these are all things that you have to kind of weigh. And the problem with mediums is we're getting all this information in our head, and our little pea brains have to try to interpret this and bring this through to you. So, you know, sometimes we can't do it. Sometimes we get it wrong. And, I'll admit, I get it wrong sometimes. And in retrospect, the client will come back and say, "Remember when you told me X, Y, and Z?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, it wasn't X, Y, and Z, but it was this." And that makes sense. So you have to take it as a whole.
Well, we're coming up on the end of the show here. We've got about 8 minutes left. Did you want to take some time, take the mic, and plug whatever it is you or what you do and where people can find you and
listen to your show?
I was going to say no and really throw you guys off, but I wouldn't do that. You guys can listen to my show. I'm on the Pararex Radio Network, and my show is called The Black Cat Lounge, and I'm at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we have a lot of great guests coming up. I'm all over the place. I'm like these guys here. I mean, I got UFO people, mediums, Wiccans. I just love everybody, and everybody has a story to tell, and I'm so thrilled to work with it. And also, I've got a couple events. I'm going to be down at in Gettysburg at the end of March for Phenology 101. I'll be there with alongside the Iron Island Museum, where I teach. April 11th, we have the Sinful Sweets and Scented Spirit Gallery reading, which is now just sold out, which is fantastic. And actually, we're going to be doing some more of those gallery readings. And what that is we actually have desserts after our readings. And the Scented Spirits, where that comes in is during the gallery readings, I do something a little bit old, you know, old-fashioned, traditional, where I take flowers, and I'll take the essence of the flower. I'll take each flower in my hand and let the flower go and tell me where I should go, who I should read, and I use the flower as a focal point for my messages, and I love it. You know, that's a lot of fun. That's old-time religion. And April 21st, I'm teaching dowsing at the Iron Island Museum, and you can get more information at www.ironislandmuseum.com. I'll also be teaching a continuing energy class, which is the manipulation of energy. I'll teach you guys how to like bend and twist spoons and perceive spirit energies within a room. I'm also going to be teaching mediumship at the Gifts of Gaia this spring. And on Memorial Day weekend, I will be at the Buffalo Central Terminal with Western New York's Ghost Hunters. Steve Gonzalez will be there. I believe Dave Tango is going to be there. So that's always a great place. And if anybody wants to go to my little website, it's free because I'm Scottish. It's www.blackcatlounge.ning.com, and my podcasts are www.blackcatpodcast.com. And you guys are beautiful people. Thank you for having me on, guys.
Thank you very much for coming on.
I was about to say, you know, you really should start doing some stuff. It just seems like you got so much time on your hands.
Yeah, really. 40-hour job. Oh, and I'm finishing up my book. It's called The Haunted Nickel City, because Buffalo, New York is known as the Nickel City. Mm-hmm. And I'm just finishing that book up now. It's for Schiffer Books, and it should be available by the fall. So that's the... I'm learning the whole new world of internet video. So I'm gonna my eventual goal is to teach via video. So I've got a lot of people that really were interested in taking my classes, but they live on the other side of the world someplace, or in my case, 6 feet away. But this way people can go and we can reach a lot of different people. So it's gonna be a lot of fun. It's so exciting. Like I say, life is exciting and opportunities and spirit is just been so wonderful to me, and I've been blessed, and
Once the book comes out, get in touch with me, and we'll have you back on the show so you can get
so I can bore you guys. So I can bore you guys some more. You guys are glutton for punishment, huh?
You are so not boring.
Well, maybe. Hey, listen, I'm a legend in my own mind, guys. So
I believe that we all are legends in our own minds.
So I know I said it was close to the end of the show, but I want to ask another question.
Sure, go ahead.
How much work in the actual paranormal investigating do you do?
I do a lot of it, actually. I'm not just tied into the Iron Island Museum. In Western New York, since I've worked on the book, I've actually investigated probably about 75% of every single place that I write about. So I've been really busy with that. So I haven't had a chance to do a lot of home, residential work. Mm-hmm. But I used to do that all the time. So, I have a class every 2 weeks at Iron Island. And at Iron Island, we do a lot of investigations over again. Again, we've done charity work for the Van Horn Mansion up in Lockport, which we've done a lot of investigations up there. I've done an investigation at Old Fort Niagara, which is fantastic. When I used to be a volunteer up there. So, I would say probably at least every 2 weeks I'm doing an investigation someplace.
Do you do the investigations from a scientific standpoint or more of a spiritual standpoint?
I'm an independent, and I love being an independent because this way I try to rise above a lot of the politics, which is pretty tough in the paranormal field, as everybody knows. And what's nice about what I do is being able to go and work with different groups because, guess what, guys? I don't have voting rights, so I don't really care. And whatever the group wants me to do, I will do whatever they want. If they want me to do mediumship and walkthrough, that's fine. I don't care. That's great. If they want me to work, as a tech member or as an investigator, I'm all for going I've got my kit. I've got my K2s and my Mel meters and recorders and laser lights and, all my target items and stuff. So, I'm ready to do that. It's all up to whomever I'm working with.
When you go in as a medium, do you not allow them to tell you much about the place?
I'd rather that they didn't. Because of the fact, the minute somebody tells you something, you create observations. The biggest problem with Iron Island, with a lot of the psychics and mediums that have gone in there, they know it used to be a church and a funeral home. So what's the first thing they see? They see priests, they smell funeral flowers and stuff like that. Those are observations. You have to wipe those clean. I would rather go into a place I have no idea what's going on. This way I can, whether or not I'm on or I'm off, it makes no difference to me. I can only tell you about the energy signatures that I'm reading within that space. And, I went to a theater one time, and that was supposedly haunted, and I'm walking in, I'm going, holy cow, man, feel that coming at you. And everybody's going, yeah, there's this is all these ghosts and everything running down there. It was residual energy. Of course, it's an energy imprint. It was a lot of happiness, people going up these beautiful grand stairs, people coming down these beautiful grand stairs. Well, what's going to be left? It's going to be happiness. So you have to go and kind of figure it out. But you try to go and you try to divorce yourself from whatever you know. We were at a little place called the Kelly Hotel in Pennsylvania, and I got this overwhelming feeling of death even before I went there. And I asked the guy, was there like a death here? And he said, well, yeah, and he wouldn't really tell me to the end, and that's cool. And I got an overwhelming feeling of a death in front of the place, which was a car crash. But there was something else nagging. And then later on, at the end of it, I found out that there was a train wreck not too far where the tracks are, right behind this place. And they laid all the bodies out in the parking lot. Well, I was only picking up one death. That's all I was picking up associated there. But, you know, it was cool because of the fact that, again, we're looking at the idea, we're looking at death as a topic, as something that came through strong. So that associated in. So, I mean, there's little things like that, you know, that these people like to tell you too much. And, you know, and I don't need any chiquitas over there to go and, like, you know, tell me all sorts of crazy things. You know, I don't want that. And people, right, on the other hand, will try to go and fool you because they'll deliberately mislead you. We had Chip Coffee at Iron Island, and Chip's a great guy, and I've met him a couple times. And he, they kept saying, all these mediums keep saying that there's children buried in this one area, you know, and he's going, there's nobody there. And I felt the same thing. And, you know, what it was the fact that, you know, everybody kind of felt that there was no children buried in this one area that's underneath, you know, this dirt floor area. And they were trying just to trick him, and he just came out and said, no, there's nobody there. So, I mean, that's another aspect of it. So going in cold is the best way.
Do you find, as a medium, when you're doing, like, EVP sessions and other similar things like that, that you get more evidence because you're, I guess you could say, closer to the spirits? I don't know.
Mediumized?
Because of being a medium, you have, I guess, relationship?
I don't know. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm the world's worst EVP collector. I get nothing. You know what? I get absolutely nothing. I really do. You know, I can go in and a friend of ours, Sandy Barnes up at Iron Island, man, she does that Constantino method, you know, where you're talking and then you play back. I mean, she gets children's voices. She gets her name called. I mean, it's great, you know, great stuff. Me, I do the same thing. I get like nothing, you know.
Right.
I hear myself breathing, people passing gas in the other room. That's what I get on my recordings, you know. Every once in a while, when I was at Waverly last year, I got two great EVPs. One was this breath that was just really great, but the other one was Don't Touch. And it was probably a Class B. It wasn't really super clear. You had to amp it up, but, yeah, Class B. But they were great. So, I mean, I walked away with something. But normally, nah, are you kidding me? You know? It just, for me, it just don't work that way.
All right. Well, once again, thank you very much for taking the time to come on the show. I know it's late and it's time for bed and all, and we appreciate it. It's been an honor talking to you.
Don't call it an honor, man. Don't call it an honor. You'll get the hate mail later.
If you wouldn't mind sticking around for a couple extra minutes after the show, just so we can say our own thank yous off air and whatever.
Absolutely. And really, the honor's all mine because, you know what, it's fantastic. And I really thank you for having me on and letting me prattle on like an old washerwoman for as long as I have.
And your show's on, Black Cat Lounge is on Monday nights?
Monday nights at 9?
That's why I never get to listen. That's what my other show is. So, yes, everyone out there, be sure to tune in Monday night to the Black Cat Lounge and come back next week right here, same time, same place, for Paraternity Radio with Marla Brooks. And what are we forgetting? If you missed half of this or you want to hear the beginning because you came in late or you missed previous shows, go to paraternityradio.podomatic.com for all of our archives. And for more information about upcoming guests, upcoming shows, and all that other stuff that we do, go to paraternityradio.com. All right, I think I'm pretty well plugged there. So with that being said, thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you all very much for coming and chatting along with us, listening along with us. Whatever you're doing, you know, if you're picking your nose and listening, that's fine, too.
Yep. How did you guys know? You're psychic. Oh, my God, that's fantastic. Wow. Holy cow, do you got a PayPal or anything? I got to send you a donation for that one.
Well, that was more or less aimed towards our producer, Chris, but that's...
Hey, I resemble that remark.
Okay, no comment? Alright, everybody. Thanks again for listening, and you've been listening to Paratrinity Radio.
Where nothing is sacred.
Tune in next Saturday night at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to Paratrinity Radio with Mike and Ellie. Paratrinity Radio, where nothing is sacred. Right here on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.